Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. On Sunday, a deadly attack on the family of U.S. District Court Judge Esther Salas left her 20-year-old son Daniel Anduril dead and her husband Mark Anduril in critical condition. The primary suspect, Roy Den Hollander, was found dead later that day from what appeared to be self-inflicted gunshot wounds. Hollander was a self-proclaimed anti-feminist lawyer who stunt lawsuits against a women's studies program at Columbia University and ladies' nights at various bars brought him numerous media appearances and some amount of notoriety. More recently, Hollander had raged about Judge Salas in a self-published manifesto. And the attack is a stark reminder of the increasing danger that many federal judges face across the country. According to the U.S. Marshals Service, which is in charge of protecting the federal judiciary, there were nearly 4,500 threats against federal judges in 2019. That's nearly five times the number of threats in 2015. Ryan Riley, a justice reporter for HuffPost, told me that the rise in threats can be attributed to the advances in technology that have made it easier for people to track down and contact judges.
The internet has really given rise to the ability for people to really focus in on individual judges who they dislike for numerous reasons and also learn a lot of information, including home addresses that could be used to target them. So this is really the first attack that we've seen against a federal judge since John Roll was killed in that attack that injured Gabby Giffords back in 2011. But the number of threats has really grown in recent years, and the Marshal Service has said recently that they would really need to sort of look at how they can better figure out when to deploy some of their scarce protective resources for judges in these circumstances, because there are just so many threats that they're seeing online. It's difficult to figure out what is exactly a serious threat and what exactly is something that is just sort of someone spouting off that they can ignore.
You said they're very thin on resources. What does that entail in terms of the protection of judges right now? Does that include having officers at a judge's home? What does it look like?
The U.S. Marshal Service overall only has around 5,000 employees, and there are more than 2,000 federal judges alone. So in most circumstances, unless there's a specific threat to a federal judge, you're not going to be having a protective detail. In fact, a few years ago, I believe there are only 17 cases in which a protective detail was set up at federal judges' home. So it's not a case like a cabinet member where they're constantly followed around. What the Marshal Service does do is help provide some sort of security system and, you know, someone that can be reachable with the Marshal Service very quickly, but often it's still going to be local law enforcement that's initially responding to any threats. But I think that what they really think they need to do is figure out how to do these evaluations better and when to actually deploy individual protective resources in these circumstances. Because, you know, even Supreme Court justices don't typically have protective details with them all the time. I mean, I definitely think that this event is going to spark some concerns within the broader federal judiciary and probably be pushing for some change. And whether that's increased resources through the appropriations process, we've seen in previous years that there have been stepped up efforts to, say, invest in home security systems for judges. But maybe there'll be more efforts to, you know, give judges increased, you know, awareness training and security training. We'll see some increased pressure on the Marshal Service to do more here for sure.
What do we know about the motive here against Judge Salas in particular, and given the fact that, I mean, were there threats that the gunman had, were there earlier threats against Judge Salas by this person?
The individual who's suspected in this had written about Judge Salas, often not using her name directly, but he was involved directly in a case previously that he eventually passed off to another lawyer that was before the judge and had written sort of disparagingly about the judge. And that's often what we have seen in cases where judges' families have been targeted. And it's been a while since the last targeted incident. In the case of Judge Roll back in 2011, he seemed to just be on the scene of the crime and wasn't actually individually targeted by the person who was going after Gabby Giffords. But in other circumstances, we have seen where judges have been directly targeted, and most often that's with someone who had direct involvement with them, whether it be a defendant, criminal defendant, or in this case, a lawyer had some sort of business before the court and some sort of specific gripe about the way that their case was handled.
You mentioned that the fact that we have had the internet for the better part of two decades now has increased the ability for people to find information about judges. But what else is really driving this increase that's making people more prone to threatening judges, particularly over the past decade?
Certainly, there are just more forums in which you can threaten judges, right? Before, you had to, you know, mail something to the clerk's office in order to threaten a judge. Now you can just post on Twitter or Facebook or any number of social media platforms. And it's interesting, you know, because when I was first starting out on the Justice Department beat, one of my first big interviews was with the former U.S. Marshals Director, John Clark. And he was sort of, you know, raising the alarm about it back then and saying that, you know, that the availability of information and the use of technology was allowing individuals to find out more about particular cases and judges' decisions and, you know, just figure out more information about the judge directly and where, and figure out methods of attack and where they might be. So there's this wealth of information available, you know, not only for against judges, but against public figures and politicians that can make it a lot easier for someone with a, you know, intend to do harm to find a way to do that to an individual.
Does anything about the political climate of the past decade also help explain the increase in threats against judges? Because this, in this particular case of Judge Salas, the person who killed her son and injured her husband here did point out that she was an Obama appointee.
Certainly. I think that's become a trend, too, is immediately assigning judges to the political party that appointed them in the first place and describing someone as an Obama judge or, you know, insert president here judge. And we've also seen, you know, frankly, from the president, increased attacks on activist judges and the judiciary. The U.S. Marshal Service, I think, is pretty hesitant about trying to make any of those sort of connections directly. And, you know, the U.S. Marshal Service isn't going to say, hey, you know, this person received a lot more threats after Trump sort of attacked them. So I think that political climate definitely adds to this, and where people sort of get really worked up about decisions that judges are making, believe they're political actors, and sometimes does rise to the level of violence when you have these disturbed individuals who get sucked into that world.
Ryan Riley is a justice reporter for HuffPost. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.